The Nature of Dragons by Eliza Fisherman. If you have any feedback or comments, please email us at eliza.fisherman@proton.me. Our email can be found in the audio drama's description. Maps can be found on our subreddit, r/thenatureofdragons. Chapter 3. Solana races against the sunset. The sturdy thunk, thunk, thunk of Deft's hooves beneath her steadies her heart and clears her mind. She resists looking back, afraid that the sight of her home diminishing against the sun-soaked skyline will stay her hand, and she'll turn Deft right around and return. Allow herself to remain seated at her father's feet forever, with her brother's ghost playing at her side, stuck in time and space, small and fragile, useless. They never tell you in the storybooks that travel's hardly an escape. Distance leaves a lot of time for thinking. "We'll go to the very north," Russell used to mutter, half asleep, with his head on her shoulder as she recited fables. Thomas, their older brother, accompanying the stories with intricate schemas woven into forms of burly bears and the foxes forever trying to outsmart the animal kingdom. Russell never wanted to hear anything but stories of the north. "Up there," he'd say, "where the sun never rises, we'll watch for shooting stars every morning. We'll pick out constellations over lunch, and after dinner we'll name new galaxies." Solana had thought it would happen one day, had imagined that they'd all pack up together, her and her brothers and her father, maybe even her husband, when the situation in Chosa was finally stable enough to leave the country for a few days, for them all to go north and exist in its endless white peace. No chance of that now. No chance of much of anything at all. As Chosa's enormous iron wall disappears from view, the countryside begins to lose its clean, maintained charm. It's almost imperceptible at first, clumps of weeds here and there among even cotton rows. As she gets further from the city, evidence of sparse pickings appears. Last year's cracked brown burrs are still packed with misshapen white locks, weighing down the fresh green stems. Eventually, 2 hours east of the city, the fields resemble little more than a wilderness held at bay by this one narrowing strip of gravel road that she is riding down. The demon infestation has long since put a stop to agricultural development, but Solana's never seen the results of it firsthand. And this, Chosa's abundant farms, degrading into a graying, barren landscape, makes her heart twist in on itself. Makes her want to dismount, kneel, plead with the earth to let them inhabit it again. This is her land, and it is dying. She doesn't stop to consult the map she has tucked away in her saddlebag. Doesn't need to. She has calculated this first leg. The distance, the speed she needs to keep. Leaving earlier in the day had not been an option. It allowed too large a window for pursuit. But leaving when she did has left her with no space for mistakes. No time for stopping. She can feel time pressing as the fire of sunset starts to burn its way across the land, snapping at her heels. And Deft, strong and steady beneath her, begins to push harder, feeling her urgency. Somehow sensing, if not understanding, the danger they are trying to outrun. But they're doing well for time, so she slows him back down to a canter, pats his black flank in what she hopes to be a soothing manner. They're alone on the road, and Solana suspects it will remain this way for most of their journey. Few are mad enough to attempt crossing the country on horseback, and for good reason. Death by demon is not an envious one, even for those actively seeking death. And the wayhouses, though providing safe shelter for the night, are far and few enough between. She could have bribed someone to get her out of the country by door, but even if she found someone strong enough with the Sila, and convinced them to spin a door between Chosa and Fahlahara, and the poor soul even kept their mouth shut, the schema's residue would pinpoint her location. The last thing she wants is to be found, dragged back, forced down the aisle before she's managed to earn her forgiveness. Off in the distance, the remainder of an enormous, headless statue kneels upon the exhausted land. She recognizes it from one of the paintings in the tower. The statue is of Johann Mordath, her great-grandfather, the one who'd given up the country to the invaders, a country that all these years later, her bloodline has yet to truly reclaim. When they reach the foot of the statue, Solana dismounts, Two plaques are set at its feet. One says, Great Lord Johann Mordeth, Father of us all. The other, Johann Mordeth, coward, traitor, deserter. Solana stares up at the statue. She'd always thought the invading Nurak had beheaded the thing, but this plate makes her think, perhaps it was the people. She shudders. This is in her blood. This kind of horrendous failure. What if that's what she's doing by leaving? What if she's a deserter too? But no. It's not as though she's planning to build a home for herself somewhere beyond Choza's borders. She's only leaving temporarily. She'll go to the University of Fahlahara. Surely their libraries have some answers to the White Lady's whereabouts, and the method by which she might be awoken. Controlled. The Tower Library was no help. She'd scoured every shelf, and still couldn't find any sign of the legends, except for a children's book that cast the White Lady as a generic villain, and a few hints in religious texts. There was nothing. They all spoke of the White Lady devouring the Sila, as though she were some giant, taking bites of the land, but none of them disclosed her location. The libraries at the University of Fahlahara are said to be the most extensive in the lands. At least, she remembers Thomas telling them as much, back in the days as a student. She shudders, hates thinking back to the eagerness with which she'd listened to his stories, waiting for the day she too would go to Fahlahara. Learn to use the Sila, but the day never came. She was as hollow as anyone else born in Choza over the last 2 decades. Shaking the thought off herself, Solana mounts Deft, urging him into a trot. Ahead of them, odd, dilapidated buildings come into view. She slows Deft down as they weave through the eerie streets of an abandoned town, with broken rooftops and torn curtains in the windows. Down an empty alleyway, Solana sees a cracked doll seated on a chair. She shudders, then urges Deft into a gallop, which they maintain well out of sight of the village's sad little houses. All about them, she sees signs of life left behind, and hears it too, or rather, doesn't hear it. The land is utterly silent. Not a raven or a breeze to offset the thick thunk of Deft's hooves on gravel. Finally, with mere minutes remaining until sunset, they reach the gaping doorway of the stone weighhouse. It's easy to recognize what with Weighhouse 1 written in big uneven letters on a sign dangling from its flat roof. It's an ugly, hasty construction of stone slabs piled atop one another, with a lopsided archway instead of a door, designed for easy access for men and horses. No surprise. Leave a horse outside the weighhouse and it'll be gobbled up as surely as a man. Solana dismounts and pats Deft's flank. The horse huffs at her, panting with exertion, and turns his great head in an attempt to sniff at her palm, looking for water. Once we're inside, little one, says Solana, pulling him into the structure by his reins. It's less a house and more a stone block without windows. There's a smoke vent in the ceiling, over a small pit in the floor. A few iron rings in the walls to tie off horses. The space is otherwise bare, but for fresh logs neatly piled by the pit, and a stack of dry hay pushed up against the far corner, brought there by Dor twice a month on her father's orders. Move! 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 Comes a shout from behind her, and Solana jerks Deft's reins, pulling him deeper into the structure and out of the doorway. A tall, heavy man runs in, panting. His shirt and jacket, twisted and pressed flat to one side, expose his stomach, making Solana wrinkle her nose in distaste. He doubles over, large palms on thick thighs, trying to catch his breath. Where the hell had he come from? He straightens, towers over her, gigantic, and for a moment she feels her spine curl, her shoulders rise, stomach tighten with the thick expansion of terror. She's stuck here, with this beast of a man, and no way out. He looks at her with something wild in his eyes, breathing roughly through his mouth. What you staring at, boy? He asks. And Solana starts. She's a boy. The man moves back to the doorway, looking onto the field. Solana shuffles a little closer and peers out from around him. 3 men are running towards the weighhouse down the gravel road. She glances to the horizon where a mere slither of the sun remains, its glow dimming with every second. One of the men trips, falls, the others turn about to go to him. Don't stop, you bloody fools! Bellows the man from the door. Grace, don't you stop! They snap to attention and pick up their pace. Go, go, go! He mutters, and Solana realizes that she's holding her breath, eyes darting from the fallen man, who's scrambled to his feet, to the sun which is barely a speck, to the two men almost at the archway now. She wishes at the sun, begging it to stay up just a moment longer. It sinks lower. She moves out of the way, tightening her grip on Deft's reins to make sure he doesn't startle. The first man bursts into the weighhouse. The second is grabbed by the shirt collar and bodily dragged inside. The three of them turn to look back at their final companion. He's almost there. She looks to the horizon. The sun is gone. It's too late. Solana wonders if people can be preemptively sick. A thin mist materializes around the last man. He's moving, but the smoke stays still, as though it's painted onto the scene. It does not part for him, does not swirl around his feet. He stumbles, takes a few more steps. More mist rises. The man doesn't scream, but he does open his mouth, arms jerking away from his body, fingers stretched wide and twitching. She can see the moment his eyes glaze over with death. By the time his body hits the ground, a single pace away from the doorway, he is nothing but a pile of bones, gleaming ivory in the dusk. This is what happened to Russell, to her soft and trusting little brother. She nearly loses the contents of her stomach. "You better be keeping your gut in," says the large man. "I ain't sharing space with your last meal." She plasters her back to the wall and sinks down to the stone floor. Realizing her hands are shaking, Solana presses her cold palms to the burning flesh of her face and tries to quiet her roiling stomach. The man's mouth twists at her in disgust. "By the look of you," he says, "I'd say you've never seen a demon gobble anyone up." Solana shakes her head. "Not up close, no," she mutters. The men glance at each other, and she wonders if she said the wrong thing. "Forgive our manners, my lord," says the man who'd first run into the weighhouse. He rubs at the back of his round, perfectly bald head. "We plain city folk rarely have occasion to mix with the highborn enough to learn manners." Solana breathes, tries to focus on him. He's lying, and he sounds strange. He's lisping his words, stretching them out. His pacing's all off, but his vocabulary's perfect. Not city folk, then, or farmers. The faithless. They must be the faithless. And if the accent is anything to go by, Nurak Inn, left over after the purge. "I'm Bart," he goes on, oblivious to Solana's scrutiny, "and these here are Lei and Alexei, twins." They seem nothing like twins to her. Lei is as small as Alexei is large. "Sel," says Solana, though it comes out more of a croak. "Lord Sel," Lei and Alexei say, giving her a small bow. They at least sound like they were born and raised in Chaucer. "And who was that?" she asks, motioning to the bones. "Don't know him, m'lord," says Lei. "We've fallen asleep in a field, and that bastard tried to skin us." "Don't insult the dead," says Bart. "We'd look just like him if he'd left us alone. He was a good thief." Bart pulls his tunic forward to show them where it's been sliced through. "Nearly got me." "Smart and fast," agrees Alexei, scratching at his nape. Solana notices how the collar of his jacket is tattered and faded from wear, how the sleeves are too short. It's not his coat. "No one deserves to die like that," he says thickly, ignoring Solana's scrutiny. "Yeah," says Lei. "You say that, 'cause it wasn't you he was trying to gut. If he hadn't gone for your belt pouch, that," Bart gestures to the bones, "would have been us." "So what?" says the skinny man, rounding on him. "You think we should be praying to the Maker for his soul?" "Nah," Bart says, raising his arms in submission, "but show some gratitude. Little bastard died for us." "Sure, sure. We shouldn't have been." Lei glances at Solana. "Out there, should have been back in the city. Shoulda." He spits out of the doorway. The spit crackles, sparking, and is gone before it hits the ground. The men jump, swear, and shove at each other, pushing their way further into the weighhouse. Solana can barely hear them. Keeps looking outside at the bones. This is the first time she's seen the flesh stripped off a man. She imagined it to be more violent, a slow removal of skin, then muscle, then organs. The actual thing is cleaner, scrupulous. The flesh is there, then it is not. "Where are you traveling to, my lord?" asks Bart, leaning over to peer at her, eyes squinting in the low light. There is nothing left of the country between the capital and its borders. All the lost towns near the weighhouses have been looted. Solana blinks up at him, takes in his flushed round cheeks, small calculating eyes, crooked nose that must have been broken one time too many, judging by the nasally way in which he pronounces his words. She pulls herself in, gets control of herself, and rises to her feet. "It is no business of yours," she says, trying her best to sound haughty. What is she supposed to say? "I've decided to run along and find the White Lady, tell her all about Chosa's plight, and for some reason, the monster will feel enough pity to help us restore our country to its former glory. Then she'll go off on a rampage of death and destruction throughout the lands. But that won't matter much to us, because we'll be saved." "I meant no offense, my lord, simply that we know the countryside well and would be happy to escort you safely to wherever you're going." "I've no need for help," she says, then softens. "No point in starting trouble, given that they're stuck together for the night. But I appreciate the offer." She walks up to Deft, who's been inconspicuously inspecting the hay, and takes his reins to tie them off on one of the thick metal loops embedded in the far wall. Deft stomps, huffs, but eventually settles enough for her to remove his saddle, feed, and water him. She can feel the men's eyes on her back, but she doesn't stiffen. One unnatural move, and she's caught. And if she's caught, well, best case, they try to return her to the city for profit. Worst case, she doesn't think about the worst case. Solana starts to brush Deft down, while the men separate a large portion of the hay, dividing it into four even parts. She watches them over Deft's flank for a moment. They're making beds, she realizes. They're making one for her, too. Bart looks up at her, smiles. A Nurak inn here, within the borders of the country, is no laughing matter. Bart must have stayed in the uninhabitable countryside during the transference of power, refusing to leave even after all his brethren were banished or executed. That's why he's still in Chosa. He wants revenge, wants her father out of the tower. The other two were born here. How did Bart convince them to join the Faithless? Did they even need to be convinced? Abruptly, her blood sings true. These are the people her father has had Thomas hunting. Each one of the three men is a danger to her family's hold on the Chosa throne. Her hand twitches in the direction of her saber, but she stills it. No, she is not here to stop one man trying to take the throne from her father. She is here to free her lands. And when she does, these men will become irrelevant. Who will want the great Lord Mordeth off his throne when the country is once more free and prosperous? There's a crackle behind her as a fire bursts to life in the pit at the center of the room. Solana stares at the wispy shadow of the schema Bart used to light it and hopes her fear is well hidden. Bart's a spinner. If she'd attacked them, she'd have never gotten out of here alive. And his companions? Can they spin too? She thought she'd stepped into the weighhouse and out of danger. Looks like she was wrong. But no problem has only one solution. So Solana digs through her saddlebag, coming up with a sack of dried meats prepared for her by the tower cook. "I do not need protection," she says as she walks over to the men. "But I will not refuse companionship. Would you accompany me out of the country?" She takes a seat across from Bart and passes him the venison after taking a piece for herself. "Surely," she goes on, "traveling the high road together is safer than going at it alone." "Ah," Bart says, tearing off a piece of meat. "If only we could, my lord. But we must return to Chosa at first light. Debts do not grow smaller with distance." Debts, thinks Solana. Of course. "We have to stay in Chosa," says Alexei with a grin, "or we won't ever come back. Hard to convince yourself to step back on this rotting land once you're off it, eh, dear cousin Bartholomew?" Solana's eyes drop. She busies herself with shredding her venison into chewable pieces and ignores the cold flush of fear that creeps up her spine at the name. Lord Bartholomew Liverday, right-hand man to Rahalan. She'd thought he was dead. They all did. Grace. And here he is, alive, living in the Lost Lands, gathering, well, she supposes Leigh and Alexei aren't much by way of support. They're hardly an army, but there are probably more of them. How many more faithless were hiding out here, protected by the demons from the watchful eye of the city guard? Bartholomew is undoubtedly a threat. This is a man the faithless can rally behind. For a moment, she almost changes her mind. She's here, and he's right within reach. But no, her father and elder brother can deal with the faithless. Later, Bartholomew pushes Solana to the makeshift cot in the farthest corner of the weighhouse. He takes the one in front of it, facing the room. If he were anyone else, she'd say he was guarding her from his companions. As it is, she feels more like his prisoner. Slipping a knife into the straw of her cot, Solana lays down on top of it, makes a pillow out of her coat. She tries not to sleep. She isn't safe, even if he hasn't recognized her. She wakes to the sound of baying hounds and Bartholomew's knife at her throat. She knows, as a hare knows, deep in its gut, when a beast is upon it, that her life is forfeit. She slept, too long, too soundly. She's left the city walls, and all her years of training remained behind them. "Let me go," she croaks, voice hoarse from the damp morning air. She tries to look around, hopes to find some chance at rescue, but they're alone apart from Deft, who's snorting and stomping where he's tied to the ring. "Let me go, and I'll give you all the gold I have. I've a lot of it, enough to buy a house within the city limits." "You brought Mordeth's guards down on us, boy," he snarls. "Months, years of living out here, and the moment you show up, they come? No gold will make up for that." "I know who you are. You're Bartholomew Liverday, right-hand man to Rahalan. Let me go, and I'll make sure the great Lord Mordeth pardons you. You'll be a free man. Your life will be yours, wherever you choose to build it. You could go back to the city, become a full-fledged citizen." His eyes narrow. He gets in very close, sniffs her. Then he runs a thumb down her neck. "You're not a boy," he mutters under his breath. Solana can see the moment he realizes who he's dealing with. "The Lady Mordeth," he drawls. "I am going to carve you from your bones until nothing's left of you but strips of meat. I'll fry them up, send them to your father's dinner table. Those dogs barking out there? They're hunting you, Lady Mordeth. Means the delivery will be swift and easy." Solana looks away. His threat is meant to distract her, upset her, make her panic. "Please," she whispers, tries to force a tear as her hand digs in the straw beneath her body, trying to keep the movement as small and as natural as possible. If he doesn't notice, then she can get at her knife. "Let me go," she says, "and I'll marry you. You'll be a lord of the land once more. I'll be a good, faithful wife, I promise." There it is, under her pillow. She pushes herself onto her elbows, teary eyes meeting his. "I promise to love you, to forget completely how we met." He laughs in her face. His breath stinks. "Were you a little more pleasant to look at?" he says, still chortling. "I might have even considered it. As it is, your father owes me much more than his second child." "You'll still rule. You'll have power. You'll advise my brother." "Advise your brother? What for? Your father's made of him a hound. I want Thomas's head almost as dearly as your father's. He's been slaughtering my family like animals. But as he hunts us, I hunt him. You're in my maw now, Lady Mordeth, and I'm going to tear you apart." Lay and Alexei run into the weighhouse. "You were right, dear cousin Bartholomew," pants Lay. "Thomas Mordeth approaches. He and his men are almost upon us. We need to go." "Thomas is coming. Thomas is almost here. Solana's saved. She just needs to hold them off, distract them long enough for him to get her. Not long. A few minutes, really, if the baying of the hounds is anything to go by." Bartholomew glances towards the entryway, and Solana uses the moment to slip around his knife and lunge at him, wrapping her arm around his neck, grabbing him by the face, stabbing, stabbing. Abruptly, she's jerked off his back. She's hanging, suspended in the air, arms and legs akimbo. She's being pulled, stretched out in every direction. Solana cries out in pain. Bloody and deformed, Bartholomew staggers to his feet, hand outstretched and shaking with the effort of holding her bound with the Sila. his face a mess, gushing thick globs of blood where her knife hilt is sticking out of his right cheek. He steps right up to her, panting, and Solana's nostrils fill with the scent of rust. The man takes hold of the knife hilt, jerks it out of his cheek, and shoves it right into her solar plexus. Then he starts to draw it down, towards her belly button, gutting her. Solana screams, writhes, tries to get away, but there's nowhere to go. The schema's too tight. Her knife keeps moving down, down through her innards. Then it stops. Bartholomew stops, jerks. The schema holding Solana in the air melts away, and she drops to the ground, the impact of her body hitting the earth, forcing the knife in deeper. She blinks, tries to breathe. There's a thump. The ground shifts with the force of it, and Bartholomew's face is laying beside her, his dead glassy eyes staring into hers. Through the hole in his cheek, Solana can see his teeth and tongue. If Solana could smile, she would. Her little adventure may have ended in her death, but at least, she thinks ruefully, she's murdered one of the most dangerous faithless in the process. "What the bloody hell were you thinking?" Thomas hisses when she comes to. She's on the grass, laid out in the sunlight, a little ways away from the weighhouse. Lillian Lan, the city's head healer, is leaning against the weighhouse rubbing at her temples, her red hair glowing in the sun. Solana watches the way the light plays off the beating of her forest green dress, sparkles shifting with every inhale and exhale. A few paces to her left, a door stands wide open in the wall of the weighhouse. It opens onto Main Street. If Solana moves her head just a little bit, she'll be able to see the blue front doors of Lillian's hospital. Farther off, in the dry grass of the field, Thomas's soldiers have dismounted and are standing, reins in hand, chatting amongst one another, while the hunting hounds lay at their feet, basking in the sunlight. Solana tries to sit up, gasps in pain, falls back down with a groan. "Don't move," snaps Thomas. "Good grace, don't move." Solana's hands go to her stomach, her fingers press into smooth, soft flesh, marred only by a raised line. Lifting her head just a little, she looks down. An ugly red scar runs down her midriff. "You got to me in time," she breathes. "Lillian healed me." "If you didn't want to marry Marcus," Thomas says, "you should have told me. Should have come to me." "That's not why I left." Thomas sits on the grass beside her, buries his face in his hands. "Then why?" Solana closes her eyes, takes a deep breath. The action sends her into a coughing fit. The coughing tugs on the freshly healed wound, racking her body with searing pain. She curls in on herself, tries not to retch. "I was told," she says once the pain subsided, "that if I can find the White Lady and wake her, she will rid Chosa of the demons." "You're mad," he says. "No," Solana shakes her head. "Listen, I have to try. Someone has to try. Sela, you overheard some stupid tale and... here's another version. Once the Mordeths leave Chosa, the demons will leave Chosa. How about this one? Once all the Mordeths are dead, the demons will die. Or, once every citizen has been eaten, the demons will fade away." "This isn't some faithless propaganda," says Solana, finally sitting up. She regrets it immediately, as pain burns through her sternum, but she refuses to lie back down. "It was a prophecy. I was given a prophecy." "Prophecies are worse. They're complete rot." She starts, then reconsiders. "Fine. Let it be rot. I'm not sending you to figure it out, am I?" "There are some things," he says, "that don't need to be figured out." Solana moves herself over to her brother with as much care as she can muster, so as not to tug at the wound. "What if it's true?" she asks, taking him by the hand. "What if it's true? What if she's real? What if I can find her? What if I can bring her back?" "So, what's your plan?" His voice takes on a mocking edge. "You're just going to march off into the world? Shout, 'White Lady, where art thou?' in every field you ride through?" "I'm going to Fahlahara," Solana informs him. "I bet they have the answers there." "You're never going to get there," he says. "Look at you." "So open a door for me," says Solana. "It would take you a second." Absolutely not. This matters to me, she says. Let me do this. Our brother just died, Thomas replies, turning to face her. And you ran away and were gutted on your very first day. You're a woman. You're hollow. The world is a dangerous place for someone like you. Solana laughs. How typical of him. The rest of the world is not as dangerous as Chosa, she reminds him. There are no demons beyond our borders. And other than those who can afford it, most people never join the university and learn to spin. My wits and saber are enough to keep me safe. That's not the point, he snaps. You think you chopped off your hair and you're like everyone else? Just because I am not as strong as you, dear brother, doesn't mean I'm not better than everyone else. I killed that man. Bartholomew was a warrior, a spinner. I killed him with my stupid pocket knife. And he only attacked me because of you. I would have been fine if you hadn't come after me. They had no idea who I was. If I hadn't come, all you need to do, Solana says, interrupting him, is open a door to Fahlahara for me. No, he says without pause. How about this, she says after a moment. We make a deal. I go to Fahlahara, do the research, and then you come get me in 10 days. No. If you don't, I will refuse the marriage. Sela, I am not going to let you run off unaccompanied into the world. Why not? This is what Mordeths do. You said that Mordeths collect sin. And yes, you're right. But we are also hopelessly optimistic. Our great-grandfather abandoned this land, but our parents, mother and father, they left their soft, simple lives in Uid and came back. They came back. They reclaimed Chosa. They fought and sacrificed. Mother died for our country. And still, father doesn't leave. In spite of everything, in spite of her, the demons, in spite of me and Russell being born hollow, like everyone else born on this land since the Nurak were expelled. In spite of the hatred and the blame, he doesn't leave. He stays. He does his job. And you did not flee, did not leave us to our fate. You could have easily married or become a scholar and had an easy, happy life. This is what Mordeths do. They risk it all for their county and their people. I may be hollow, but I am still a Mordeth. You give your life to our country, and I am going to do my part. You have two choices. You can help me, or you can try to thwart me. But hear this, no matter what you do, I am going to find the White Lady, and I am going to free our land, and nothing, not even you, are going to stand in my way. Thomas gets to his feet, marches away. Solana tries to follow, but movement intensifies the ache in her midriff. Her vision blurs, and she has to lower herself back down for fear of fainting. 7 days, he says, finally coming back to her. I will open the door for you and give you 7 days. Then you meet me at Fahlahara's main door station, and I bring you home. Give me your word. You have it, she says without hesitation. He stares into her eyes, as though looking for the lie. Not finding it, he nods. I know you blame yourself for Russell, he says, but Sela, I love you. If you die... I won't die. Thomas sighs, says, if they give you any trouble, find Pluark, the librarian. Tell him I sent you. Solana nods. Thomas beckons Lillian over. She places a palm onto Solana's chest, and something pushes into her, something thick and warm. Solana thinks that she can almost see Lillian's schema. But she can't, it's nothing, just a trick of the light. The warmth retreats, making Solana shudder. Lillian shrugs. She's fine. We got to her in time. Lillian, Solana starts. I don't want to hear it, snaps Lillian. I don't want to know your reasons. I don't want your excuses. You nearly died, you selfish, spoiled... Lillian, says Solana. That's enough. The woman opens her mouth to say something else. Then she shakes her head and marches away, walking through the door onto Main Street and slamming it shut behind her. You too, Thomas calls to the guards. Take the horses and the hounds and go home. The men rise, gather the reins, open the door, leading their steeds through it, leaving Thomas and Solana alone. Thomas helps Solana to her feet, and though the aches soften some, she knows that she'll be in pain for days to come. "Be very careful," says Thomas, "and don't tell anyone who you are. We are not liked much more out there than we are in here, but Pluark you can trust." Solana nods, hugs her brother. He doesn't hug her back. Something small and hurt convulses inside her, but she doesn't say anything. What is there to say? She'd probably hate him too if their situation were reversed. If Russell had died because of Thomas's stupid mistake, Solana would have never forgiven him. So why would Thomas ever think of forgiving her? Solana's carelessness is unforgivable. Still, she has to try. There is no other choice. Solana goes into the weighhouse to retrieve her saddlebags and Deft. He stomps and snorts, happy to be finally leaving the confines of the stone building. When she comes back out, the door is already open.